Black Music Month interview. Sonny Rollins.
All right, y'all, we're listening to the Street Official Real Talk podcast, and you know, we're celebrating Black Music Month, and for me, I thought it was important for us to look at the other genres that truly have been the foundation and represented Black music from the very beginning. And I gotta say, it's really a pleasure to have this person with me on the phone today, which I would probably consider one of the most significant individuals of the 20th century in terms of Black music. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey, man, this is Sonny Rollins, and I am a jazz musician, I should say. And I've been out here a while, played with Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Thelonious Monk, J.J. Johnson, Clifford Brown, Max Roach, all the people, Dizzy Gillespie. A lot of people that were very important in making a musical statement, and as well as a musical statement, a political and social statement during the period directly after World War II. So that was from the 40s, mid-40s, on to the present time. You know, one of the important things I wanted to do in talking to you, and also just, you know, for these fans that are always listening to this podcast, is give them a chance to actually hear, like you were saying, you know, we're speaking about music as well as politics, as well as just being men. And I think it's important for people to know that, you know, beyond what the musicians play for us, that they have a mindset and they have a lot of expression and a lot of things to say, even though there's not a lot of outlet to get opinions. But we're going to get yours today. So first thing I want to ask you is, I want to ask you, you know, what do you think the significance of Black Music Month is for Black musicians and artists? Well, I think it's very important to realize that Black music is the foundation of music. We all know that music sort of comes out of the Black continent, you know, and I'm not saying this to be, say, oh, I'm better than you, all this kind of stuff, but music, since Africa is the oldest continent, I mean, everybody starts to have to admit that, so we know that all
all good stuff comes out of there, and the drum and all the origins of all sorts of music as communication, as festive occasions. Everything comes out of there. So we have a lot of music coming out of the Black diaspora, as you know, from all over the, wherever there's Black people. They've influenced the music. There's even Black so-called classical, so-called European musicians been played by Black people. Beethoven was a mulatto. It's a whole thing. The political thing is something else where it's hard for Black people to get recognized, et cetera, et cetera. But that's political. But as far as the music goes, I'm very proud of the fact that I was born Black and able to have some kind of a statement.
God bless you. And I want to ask you about this. You know, your 2006 release, Sonny Please. And I want to know if you can give us some background on that album, Sonny.
Well, I think it's one of my best received albums. You know, I got a Grammy nomination for it, and I have some original songs on there. I have some standard songs I heard when I was a little boy on the radio and movies and all that. And I have a great band on there. And so I'm very happy with that record. It was the first record I have in my own company now, Doxy Records. So it's a milestone, actually, that recording. And I'm pleased with it. I'm never completely pleased because I'm one of these perfectionists. But as far as things go, I think that I'm proud of the effort, you know.
So I want to ask you, you know, do you have a favorite song on your album, Sonny Please? And if so, what would be the reason that you would say that's maybe one of your favorites?
Well, I would say probably Sonny Please is my favorite song because it is an original composition and it is a little bit different direction of some of the other things on the CD. It's a little bit of a, I'm a very sort of player that can play a lot of different styles. I played a lot of different people. And Sonny Please is a somewhat of a different direction. And so that surprised a lot of people that expected me to sort of play sort of within the same things more or less that I had done years before. And so this particular number was very good. I intend to do more things like that since it's natural to me to play that way. I like playing the way I played on Sonny Please. It's a somewhat of a different direction in a sense. So I guess I would have to say that because of that, I would pick that as sort of my favorite song on the CD.
And I want to say, you know, as you talk about, you know, being involved in various styles, it brings up another question for me, which you started off as a pianist, am I correct?
Well, I had piano lessons when I was young, but I didn't really get into it. You know, I wanted to play stickball and everything on the street, so being the baby in the family, my mother let me get away with studying piano. So I really didn't take piano lessons. But, I had a couple of lessons, and I liked music all the time. So I sort of messed around with the piano. But I wasn't really trained as much as I could have been, you know.
Well, you know, you've had over 50 years in the music business and even longer as a musician. And I'm just curious, you know, what motivates you to still record and perform?
Well, that's a very good question. One thing is my trying to be a perfectionist. I mean, I've heard so much great music and been involved with so many great musicians over the years that I know what is great. So I don't think I'm there yet, and I'm still practicing every day. I'm still writing and everything. So I think one of the things that keeps me going is the fact that I'm still trying to better myself and get closer to my ideal as a player. So that's one thing that keeps me going, you know. And it's a struggle because that's not the way things are these days. You have to, there's not too much idealism as far as these things in music go. Things are sort of, well, I made it, I got some money, and, you know, and this kind of stuff. So I'm living in that kind of world, but I still want to be a better player. And every time I go out on the stage, that's my challenge. And that's kept me very much involved in music. And I just love it, you know. It definitely fills a big void in my life.
This is an exclusive iTunes Black Music Month interview. Sonny Rollins.
I want to say, you know, and you know, in my years, I've been able to recognize the role that, you know, jazz music has contributed to, you know, the foundation of other genres, some of the current genres. And I want to ask you, you know, what's your opinion on the role that jazz has played in influencing other genres, whether it be R&B, soul, rock and roll, blues, or whatever else? What's your take on the influence jazz has had on these movements?
Well, I think that jazz is like the umbrella music of all of the ones that you just named, hip hop and rock and pop. And now blues is very, you know, a lot of jazz musicians is very close. It's like cousin to jazz, and you know, a lot of jazz musicians are close to the blues, and blues musicians would love to play jazz, but jazz is a little more complicated in many ways. But it's all one family, so I would say that jazz is I'd say, you know, if you go back to the spirituals, you know, you take the spirituals, and out of that you have your blues coming out of that, but also you have jazz. And to me, jazz is a little more to my liking. You know, when I was a young kid in high school coming up, there was a group of us together who like jazz, but and there were a lot of rhythm and blues cats. I mean, really great players out there. But we like jazz because it was a little more sophisticated. So we liked Duke Ellington. We liked Billie Holiday. We liked Count Basie and all those people, Coleman Hawkins and Lester Young. All these. Because the music was a little more sophisticated and intellectual in a sense. So we and jazz people sort of gravitated towards that. I think the blues and rhythm and blues and stuff is more elemental music. I mean, you know, anybody can move to that because it's, the beat is right there for you. Mm-hmm. But jazz is a little more complicated, and so it just takes it to a different level, another level. And if you have the kind of mentality like that we have to appreciate that kind of music, then that's where you end up, loving that type of music.
And when you think about, you know, and Sonny, you know, you've played with all of the greats, you know, and it's going to be a loaded question, and not really, but I just want to ask you, you know, when you think about the greatest musicians that you've come across, and I know that list is probably long, you know, with the amount of years you've played, but if you can give me maybe three of the greats that you've played with, and why would you say they were great?
Well, it's hard to give you just three, but I could. I liked Miles Davis a lot. He had sort of a temperament in his music and a real soulful way of communicating. Of course, Charlie Parker, who was sort of our father in jazz. He was sort of the prophet of so-called bebop music. And that's where we were coming up and coming into bebop. So I liked, I would say, Charlie Parker. And then I would also have to mention, of course, Thelonious Monk, who was completely individual and very influential artist who had contributed to all of the bebop players, although what Monk was playing was a little bit different. He had his own thing. He was really just a unique person, you know, just like so many black musicians are completely unique. You know, you can't, which is why the music has to stay black in a sense, because there's a lot of good people that copy black musicians, but you don't have the black people are the ones that originate, see, and that's a difference. So it's one thing to say, oh, yeah, well, a lot of people like jazz now, and they play all this stuff, but what they're playing is copying what black people did. And so you can't go on copying. At any rate, I'm just throwing that little editorial comment in there. But Monk was completely unique, you know. And I'd say Coltrane, who was more like my contemporary, he was also completely unique. And all the guys playing like Coltrane now. And, you know, these are people that can't be duplicated because what they brought to the music is what makes the music what it is. You know, so we have to, of course, try to keep a high level of music. But as we know, times change. You know, your kids always have to have a different music than you do, and so on and so forth. But I think it's important for black people and black people interested in music to know everything, just like we should know history. We should know a lot of things about history as people. as well as a history of music. And there's no problem with that. You know that and do what you do as a 15-year-old. That's cool, but still know your history and what that's about, you know? And so I would say those are some of the people I played. I played with the great Bud Powell. He's another guy that was a genius who sort of set the tone for a lot of the piano players we hear today, like Herbie Hancock and all these guys. I was lucky, and of course I have to mention Coleman Hawkins, who was considered the father of the tenor saxophone. And he was my main man, and I had an opportunity to play with them, record with them. It was a great thrill for me. And see, this is supposed to be three or four, but it's like getting it's a lot more.
That's all right.
And then, of course, Lester Young, who was, the great, great stylist and saxophonist, who was sort of different than Coleman Hawkins. And but he was so great. A lot of people started playing more, I would say, like Lester. Came out of that bag. So those people have something that anybody can listen to and appreciate if you listen and to music in this kind of a way. If you listen to music to just, as a pastime and, hey, just have fun and never mind what's going on, fine. You don't have to know this, but if you listen to music as a spiritual way of edifying yourself and raising your consciousness, it's important to know about these people that I mentioned, because they all had a great deal to do with what is going on today.
You know, one of the things I want to ask you about is, you know, can you give us a description of what the jazz eras were like? And I'm saying eras because there was more than one golden era for jazz. Unlike, I don't think any other genre has actually had that, where, you know, the surgence of popularity comes back after going away for X amount of time and so on. And just so you understand where I'm going with this, you know, I can look at your album covers and look at your clothes, look at your hairstyle, look at, you know, even listening to tell that the trends were changing. I'm just wondering if you can give us a background of maybe just one of, let's say, your favorite era of jazz and what was going on, including the clothes, the slick talk, everything.
Well, you know, going back before I started playing, I mean, there was great people that influenced everybody. Of course, we have to mention Louis Armstrong, who was sort of the person that not only was a great musician, but by his playing, by his music, he turned the world around. I mean, he changed the way people looked at the world by his music, and you had in a positive way, I should say. You know, he was just such a great artist. You know. And you had great people like prior to our generation. You had people like Fletcher Henderson, and you had all the great big bands at the time. In fact, while I was waiting for you to call, I was sitting in the room, and they had this movie on about these singers, dancers, they were called Vernon and Irene Castle. They were very big-time dancers who began dancing, and the whole country got into this dancing. Everybody had a style, and, you know, in the castle, Vernon and Irene Castle, you know, they fixed their hair the way they did everything. They just It just swept the United States. And I noticed in this picture, of course, they had nothing but white bands playing for them. But the truth is that there was a black band who Vernon Irene Castle would not perform without this band. It was a guy called Jim Europe, a black cat who was a musical genius. And his music inspired this Vernon and Irene Castle, who revolutionized the United States with their style of dancing. But what was not in this picture was any notice of Jim Europe, you know, which, you know, is sort of normal, but if somebody just looked at that, they would say, oh, gee, well, you know, it's all people, Caucasian people and so on, which is, I have nothing against nobody. But the point is that Jim Europe was one of the predecessors of what people are doing today. That was back during the First World War, 1918, that period. And then before that, remember you have Scott Joplin? I mean, you know, and plus there's so many names of people that we don't know about because nobody documented what they were doing.
Right.
See, and this is a big problem in trying to get your history straight.
Right.
And some of these people contributed to the people that we know about. You know, great people like Fats Waller, the great piano player and singer. And of course, my man was Louis Jordan, who was really the cat that turned me on. You know, when I heard his band, I said, man, I got to get me a saxophone, try to play like him. But all these people, these are famous people, but there's so many other people who were great musicians and don't get their due. People like Vic Dickinson, great trombone players, and Buster Bailey, great clarinet players, you know, better than the people that we know about. So it's a constant struggle, but it's a parade of great people that keeps the world moving, keeps the world turning. Just jazz keeps the world spinning around. The music has been that force for action, and has kept things moving, and hopefully some of the artists can get something beside a hard life out of it. Most of them didn't. A lot of people I know had a very difficult life. They weren't appreciated. Their music was stolen. They had to play in funky clubs and ended up using whiskey or drugs or everything to excess. So a lot of the people, you know, toiled and didn't get any rewards in this life. So that's what we have to contend with. We have to understand that. But nevertheless, whether they got rewards or not, they were there and they did it for the hip-hoppers and everybody that's playing today. So it's all part of the whole spectrum of black music.
This is an exclusive iTunes Black Music Month interview. Sonny Rollins.
In all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces.
host of Black Music Month interview, Sonny Rollins.
When you think about, you know, the past, the musicians of the past, and you look at, you know, the young musicians of today, do you feel like the same passion is there to be great, to be innovative, to be creative?
Well, I think in the jazz world, yeah. But what happened is that, you know, it's very interesting. Musical instruments were taken out of the high schools at a certain point. And so a lot of the kids actually began rubbing records and all that stuff. But the point was that the creativity will always come out. But I find that the kids that are into jazz and younger people that are into jazz are very passionate about it. And they try to keep up the spirit, you know. Guys like James Carter and Kenny Garrett and Joshua Redman and Roy Hargrove, you know, the younger jazz musicians, all have deep appreciation of what came before, and they have great passion for it. You know, there's just is not enough outlet for it. You know, I mean, if you have, there should be a jazz radio or TV show. You know, when I go to Japan, they have a jazz TV shows. It's just two guys sitting on a set on the TV, and they're spinning records. And they have a picture of the album there, and it sounds beautiful. I mean, so it's, what I'm saying is that if you live in a very commercial country like we do, it's hard to appreciate a lot of the things that are happening, so that there is no TV, jazz TV show. There should be. There should be something that would bring all of the arts together, you know, just like what you're doing right now. There should be a TV show with great jazz and great hip-hop guys, and great, I mean, all of it together on the same show, I should say, so that the similarity can be seen. See, and that way the cultural underpinning of it all can be understood more by people. So that's something that maybe you should think about.
Well, you know, Sonny, I'll say this, you know, I agree. I think, you know, the influence of corporate entities as well as statistics, you know, and statistics is something that I hate when I hear the word just in general, because it usually, in my opinion, relates to something that can be used as a tool to say no or to hold people or whatever else. And what ended up happening at some point, you know, the categories of music were not just used as a description of sound, but more as a description of sales point.
Right.
And what happens is, you know, like, you know, there is a BET Jazz, you know, channel that's on the satellite, you know, and you also have BET. We only have a couple of black channels, but even on the variety shows, outside of those channels, you know, like as you're saying, it would really be important to share hip hop and jazz and R&B and blues, because culturally that all belongs to us.
Right.
And we don't see the connection. So for folks who get channeled down hip hop, that's all they know.
Right.
And
right.
They lose a sense of the pride that they should carry in relation to a Sonny Rollins or a Herbie Hancock or a Miles Davis or B.B. King or Bobby Blue Bland. They have no connection to any of that, because it's all about what's current, and everything can be considered to be current if it's exposed.
Right, exactly.
You know, and I want to ask you a question going back into that era. And I want to ask you this, you know, traditionally, you know, white label owners were notorious for using unfair business practices. And of course, it's been mostly noted from rock and roll. You know, Little Richard, you know, he's one of the most vocal folks about what exactly happened to him during, you know, his heyday. And I want to ask you, was that the same thing that was happening in jazz? Was that going on where your publishing is being ripped off from you and your songs are being stolen and, you know, you're not being paid fair, you know, fair wage or fair royalty and so on? I mean, how do you feel about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Same thing in jazz, of course. There used to be an alto player, a cat named Gigi Grice. And Gigi was one of the first people that always used to tell us to, you know, own your own publishing company, man, and get your own, watch your contracts and this and that. He's really ahead of his time. And Gigi was a fine alto player. He played with Mingus and a lot of different people. But anyway, no, that happens. That happens a lot to anybody, I guess, in the music business, entertainment business. You know, you got the businessmen out there trying to rip you off. I mean, of course, it happens to black people more so than others, but it happens to everybody, I think, in the business. Mm-hmm. And you know, we had to contend with it, and it's taken a long time. Things have maybe changed a little bit. It's a little bit better. It's a little bit better, you know, but basically, the whole commercial thing is what really the problem is. I mean, like you mentioned, the corporations and, you know, those are cold-hearted people, you know that. So they don't care about nobody, black or white. It's just about, the green. So they rip anybody up. And, of course, being in a minority position in the United States, as black people are, why we get ripped off more. But more important than that, the point is that our contribution is what is greater than everybody else, and that is what is getting ripped off. So it makes it different for the black experience, because for every little Richard, I mean, that gets ripped, I mean, there's a whole bevy of white people who've copied him. So he gets ripped, yeah, but all these other people are making a lot of money off of him.
Right.
And other people, you know, all the other guys, because the music is originally a black product. But that's, you know, so... You know, it's a very difficult way. I'm not an economist, and I don't know too much about how it could be better. But I know it would be better if what we are talking about now, having more people understand the power of the black contribution to music, I think that would definitely be good. That's something that we could do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without expecting corporations to change, you know.
And I agree, and I don't expect them to. And, you know, again, we should take responsibility for, you know, what belongs to us, you know. And in saying that, I'm going to ask you another question, and this one can range from, you know, your heyday to the current status. I want to ask you, you know, what have you seen good and bad that has evolved in black music?
Well, that sounds like you're trying to get me involved in the hip hop controversy.
No, I'm not. I'm not trying to take you there. I mean, it could be a range of things, you know. But you don't have to go down that route. I can even take that out.
You know, I don't see too much bad about I'm primarily involved with jazz, and jazz has always, especially the people that I had the privilege of being involved with, they were always very sincere, conscientious people who lived and died for their art. So that kind of dedication is sort of my how I look at music. Now, I'm sure there are people that are into music maybe that don't have that kind of dedication or feeling, but they may just have some talent and able to do it on talent, but I'd rather not be negative about anybody. Now, as far as the hip-hop thing goes, that's very interesting also, because what did our generation do to really, even though we fought and did all the stuff we did, we didn't really leave things appreciably better for the young black generation coming up today. I mean, in some ways we did. I understand all of that, but I mean, in a way we didn't. I mean, nobody, there were no black people that owned their own music and all that stuff. So the young black cats coming up in hip-hop and all this, at least they have made a contribution that they own, a lot of them own their own stuff, they're entrepreneurs, and that they sell their own records. I mean, this is what I think I've heard a lot of people say. I'm not, you know, I could be wrong, but I know that a lot of the hip-hop artists have more control over their music than we did. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I've been led to believe. So if that's true, then it's very hard for me to criticize hip-hop artists for anything they do, because they had to take care of what they had to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very tricky. I don't feel that I can criticize too much the young artists that are coming up. As far as the language and all that, well, there might be, you know, there might be some criticism or some way to approach that, but I don't even know how to do that, because these guys are talking about stuff they hear on the street every day.
Right.
And that's life to them. So how can somebody that's a bougie, you know, living in a nice surroundings and all that, as nice as you can get, and you know, for a minority, but how can they criticize people that are in the neighborhood and facing these things every day? So it's hard for me to criticize the hip-hop people, you know, and you know, that's sort of my feeling about that, you know.
Well, you know, Sonny, I'm gonna give you my take on that same question, and I'll say this, you know, the good thing that I've seen, and I'll agree with you, is the, you know, entrepreneurial aspect of what my generation has done and created, you know, and even from a standpoint of leading by example, to show people how to actually conduct business in a structure that is not made for them to win. You know, it's not made for them to own their own masters. It's not made for them to design their own clothes or to do some of the other things that they've been successful about. You know, my negative to my generation is the ego that goes along with the musicianship. And I'm not talking about what guys say on record, but I love music. And one of the things that I realized, you know, going back 10, 15 years ago, is that a lot of people will no longer play along with other people. And I'm not saying that there aren't bands that exist, but, you know, when I was a child, you know, we always had little makeup bands that we, you know, we learned how to play. You know, if I play on stage with you, there's a certain connection between band members, and there's a certain amount of education that you get as you're playing with different people and having different experiences. And at a certain point, the electronic music, in my opinion, took its toll on how we receive and how we innovate music. And I'm not saying music isn't still innovative, but there are a lot of elements that are no longer, as James Brown said, he didn't necessarily mind being sampled, but he wished that the kids had learned how to do what he had done and took it from there. Build your own, be creative. And I see some things that have changed, and I know it's not all the kids' fault because I'm not trying to go there. I mean, like I said, the schools are suffering and, ironically, no instruments. A lot of things have been taken out of these black schools to basically push these kids out into the streets, as much as no one will say that, it's a conspiracy. And I've heard some of my friends have come to me and say, man, you're always talking about conspiracies. Well, call it what it is. But, again, that would be one of the things I would point out. In your incredible career, what would you say is probably the single proudest moment that you can remember?
Well, Charlie Parker was, as I mentioned to you before, he was our messiah. Because Charlie Parker came along and not only was his music revolutionary, but he also had a different attitude. Like he wasn't an entertainer, so to speak. When he played, he was serious. He stood up, he played. There was no acting or dancing or smiling and laughing. And I say that not to denigrate the black people who came before him, like Louis Armstrong. Those people had to do that to get, that's what they had to do. But Charlie Parker, coming along the mid-40s, was the person that personified not only his music, which was what we was into, but his actions. He was a person that tried to have a dignity about himself and the way he was playing, which is also why I gravitate to Coleman Hawkins. Coleman Hawkins was another cat who was really a very proud cat, and he just played his horn, and he's extremely over everybody else musically, and he was proud of it and he acted it,
Right.
But anyway, Charlie Parker was this same type. So what I'm proud of in my career, I guess if you said, is that a long time ago, I was strung out on drugs. See, we all thought that Charlie Parker, because Charlie Parker used drugs, so we all thought that, well, that was a thing to do. If Charlie Parker did it, well, then it must be cool,
Right.
So we all did it, and then we got strung out. But what I found out, and this from Charlie Parker himself, and he didn't tell me this. I could just see himself, just something about the way he looked when I went through a scene with him about drugs. He was hooked, and he didn't want all of his young protégés, like myself, to get into drugs. But he couldn't get off of drugs himself. And this was his episode on the cross. So I recognized that, man. We had a record session. I had the privilege of doing a record session with the great Charlie Parker. And this incident occurred during that. And I got the message, from Bird that, yeah, man, this was not, he didn't want to see all these young cats following him in the path of destruction. So my proudest thing in my life was that after I got the message, I would say Charlie Parker and my mother was stuck by me. I mean, everybody else had as I always say, they see me coming, they cross the street because they know I was what we used to call in those days a gouster.
How you define that?
Huh?
How do you define that?
Well, a gangster would be a cat that would take anything from you if he could. you know, he'd be out to rob you and steal, you know, and not necessarily in a belligerent way. He would steal your wallet if you turned around, you know. So, I mean, Gloucester was a low-level cat, you know.
Yes, sir.
So, anyway, when I went to Charlie Parker, imparted this bit of wisdom to me, not in a, he didn't come out and say this. I picked it up from looking at his eyes, you know, when he found out that I was a mess. I told him, oh, Bird, I'm straight, you know. That was his nickname, Bird.
Right.
I said, oh, yeah, Bird, I'm straight, man. So he then later on the, some cats on the session told him, no, man, son, you're still messing around. And then I saw the look on his face, man, and that steeled me. I said, okay, well, that's it, man. I'm going to get myself together. So to me, that was what I'm most proud of. I went to a rehabilitation place. I had already gotten involved with the institutionalized system. Due to that habit that I had. But at any rate, I went to a place on my own volition and got straight, kicked my habit, you know, and said, I'm going to turn my life around. And I was very anxious to see Charlie Parker to let him know that I got his message, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, as life would have it, he passed away before I was came out of this institution, which was something like the Betty Ford Clinic at that time.
Right.
You know, it was when those places were, you know, wasn't a prison. It was sort of like a Betty Ford Institute. So anyway, after I did that, I came out and got myself a menial job, porter, worked on the truck, delivering stuff and all this kind of, you know, did all that stuff, but trying to get myself together in a, mentally and physically to be able to get out there and play my horn and not get messed up.
Right.
With the vices of life. And so I did that. And I had a few tough times there, but I did that. And stayed away, got clean, got myself together, came back on the scene, started playing with the great Clifford Brown and Max Roach's group. Finally got myself off of all habits, you know, stop drinking, smoking, all this stuff. So anyway, that would be what I am most proud of, because it's something which other people can learn from and say, well, if he did it, I can do it, you know.
This is an exclusive iTunes Black Music Month interview. Sonny Rollins.
Black Music Month interview. Sonny Rollins.